The day before her 17th birthday, Amanda Berry clocked out of her Burger King shift and accepted what seemed like a harmless ride home. Within minutes, she found herself chained in a basement, her screams drowned out by a radio blasting at full volume. This wasn't a scene from a horror film. This was April 21st, 2003, in Cleveland, Ohio, and it marked the beginning of a captivity that would stretch across 10 years. What makes this story so haunting isn't just the brutality of what happened inside that house on Seymour Avenue, but how ordinary it all seemed from the outside. A school bus driver living in a working-class neighborhood, a man who waved to neighbors and played bass in local bands. Meanwhile, behind boarded windows disguised by curtains, three women endured a reality that would test every boundary of human endurance. Their captor, Ariel Castro, had perfected the art of hiding in plain sight, and his crimes would shake an entire city to its core. Castro transformed his house into a fortress designed to trap without raising suspicion. He covered windows with boards hidden behind curtains, installed exterior locks on bedroom doors, and kept a radio blasting to mask cries for help. Amanda spent her first days chained to a radiator with barely enough slack to reach a trash can serving as her toilet. Most devastating, Castro forced Amanda to watch news coverage of her disappearance, displaying her family's anguish while he watched with twisted satisfaction. He claimed to have called her mother, taunting that Amanda was now his wife. When he offered to let her write home if she claimed she'd run away, Amanda refused. She wouldn't compound her family's pain. Her diary became her lifeline, written on napkins and fast food bags. She created a photo frame from a snack box, using chewed gum to attach family pictures. During assaults, she'd stare at her mother's picture, mentally escaping to memories of home. This wasn't just survival, it was daily resistance against complete erasure. Castro's pattern began years earlier with his common-law wife, Grimilda Figueroa, who endured broken bones, accusations, and being thrown downstairs, causing brain trauma that developed into a tumor. When his son called police during one beating, Castro threatens Nilda into silence. The grand jury declined to indict. This violence became his blueprint for captivity. He told each woman different versions of events to prevent alliances, and regulated bathroom breaks, portion sizes, even television shows. Amanda's mother, Luana Miller, launched a relentless search. Detective Rich Russell noted troubling details. It was Amanda's birthday, she'd left cash at home, and had no history of running away. The FBI deployed phone tracking equipment just 1,000 feet from Castro's house, ironically, at the Family Dollar where Michelle Knight had been abducted months earlier. After 8 fruitless days, they abandoned surveillance. The investigation was complicated by Samantha Farnsley, who resembled Amanda so closely that strangers constantly mistook her. The most heartbreaking incident came when police brought Samantha in on a truancy charge and asked Luana to identify her. Seeing the blonde ponytail from behind, Luana gasped, but when the girl turned around, her face fell. "No, that's not my child," she said softly. Meanwhile, Castro continued his double life, joining search efforts for Gina DeJesus after abducting her in 2004, attending vigils with tears in his eyes. In perhaps the most disturbing twist, Castro's journalism student's son knocked on the DeJesus family's door, interviewing Nancy about Gina's disappearance. The following month, his article appeared in the Plain Press. On Christmas Day 2006, Amanda gave birth to Jocelyn in her prison room. Michelle assisted, while Castro sat reading a medical book, making Amanda bite a shirt to muffle her screams. When the baby didn't breathe immediately, panic seized the room, until finally they heard her cry. Castro fashioned diapers from old socks and refused to buy formula, fearing security cameras. Amanda survived on spoon-fed water for 3 days before successfully nursing. Jocelyn's arrival shifted everything. Castro fell in love with his daughter, visiting during lunch breaks and even taking her outside while keeping the mothers imprisoned. For Amanda, motherhood meant transforming their prison into a classroom. She taped alphabet letters to walls, created worksheets, and started each day at 9 a.m. with the Pledge of Allegiance. Her chain limited how far she could reach when Jocelyn crawled away, but she found purpose in protecting and educating her daughter. This wasn't just survival anymore. It was building a future within impossible circumstances. Rescue came heartbreakingly close multiple times. Police knocked on Castro's door in 2004 to question him about a school bus incident. Amanda was chained upstairs but couldn't hear over the blasting radio. In 2008, an officer pulled Castro over for an improper license plate, but let him go after he identified himself as a bus driver. The most devastating near rescue came when police raided the house next door. Castro rushed the women inside, ordering silence. Through the doorway, Amanda saw police with drawn guns. Castro stood blocking them, casually calling out, "What's going on, officer?" Too smart to look suspicious by closing the door. Between these near misses, Castro orchestrated twisted movie nights and holiday celebrations, creating a warped sense of normalcy. The women existed in separate rooms, occasionally forced to interact under his supervision, never knowing what version of him would appear, the one who brought fast food leftovers or the one who arrived with violence in his eyes. On May 6, 2013, Amanda discovered Castro had left without securing her door. With his car gone, she faced a terrifying choice: attempt escape and risk brutal punishment, or remain captive. She sent Jocelyn to her room and crept downstairs. The front door opened, but a chained storm door blocked her exit. She pushed her arm through the gap and screamed for help. Neighbor Charles Ramsey encouraged her as she kicked the bottom panel until it broke. She pulled Jocelyn through and ran across the street. "Help me, I'm Amanda Berry," she told the 911 operator. "I've been kidnapped and I've been missing for 10 years, and I'm here, I'm free now." In the ambulance, Amanda, Michelle, and Gina sat together for the first time as free women. When Jocelyn called her Gina instead of Chelsea, the reality hit. They were finally free. Castro received life plus 1,000 years after pleading guilty to 937 felony counts. Michelle confronted him in court. "I spent 11 years in hell. Now your hell is just beginning." 33 days later, he hanged himself with a bedsheet. On August 7, 2013, a mechanical claw demolished the house on live television. The women's return to normal life has been gradual. Amanda homeschools Jocelyn while learning to drive and pushing herself to try new things. Gina worked toward her high school diploma and got her first job as a restaurant hostess. On the one-year anniversary of their escape, they met President Obama and Vice President Biden, where Biden shared about losing his wife and daughter, his eyes filling with tears as he praised their courage. Their story prompted the first summit on long-term missing children, challenging the assumption that victims held for years are likely dead. Of 400,000 children reported missing yearly in America, about 100 are stranger abductions, and experts now stress that many long-term missing children may still be alive. Their journey from darkness to light proves that even in unimaginable circumstances, hope can survive. As Amanda wrote during captivity, "Choose happiness. Resilience isn't about never breaking, it's about finding reasons to keep going, protecting what matters, and believing that someday the door will open."